This episode is brought to you by Hired.com. Searching for a new job can feel stressful, scary, and time-consuming. Pushy recruiters try to sell you on roles that you don't actually want. And job boards make you feel like you're throwing your resume into a black hole, never to be seen again. Sometimes you go all the way through an interview process just to find out at the very end that the salary offer or company culture doesn't match what you're looking for. Hired is the world's most intelligent talent matching platform for full-time and contract opportunities in engineering, development, design, product management, data science, sales, and marketing. We make your job search faster, focused, and stress-free. Instead of endlessly applying to companies and hoping for the best, Hired puts you in control of when and how you connect with compelling new opportunities. After completing one simple application, top employers apply to hire you. On Hired, you receive personalized interview requests and upfront salary information so you can make informed decisions about which opportunities to pursue over a condensed timeline. Throughout the process, your dedicated talent advocate will have your back, providing unbiased career coaching to help you put your best foot forward with potential employers. Hired offers access to 4,000 plus innovative employers, including big brands such as Facebook and smaller emerging startups. The size and type of company you want to connect with is totally up to you. We help people find new opportunities in 17 major cities in North America, Europe, Asia, and Australia. Open to relocation? Let us know. Your privacy and autonomy in your job search is of utmost importance to us. That's why Hired hides your profile from your current and past employers. The best part is it's always free for you to find your next job on Hired, no exceptions. We pay you to get hired. Today's listeners can earn double our normal $1,000 hiring bonus by signing up with the show's link. That's right, earn $2,000 for finding your next chapter on Hired. Visit hired.com/reactnativeradio to learn more. This episode is brought to you by DailyDrip.com. DailyDrip makes keeping up to date on programming skills easier. You already know how much time it takes to find good resources and learn new languages. What if the hard part of that was already done for you? Sign up for DailyDrip and pick a topic that you want to learn about. Want to learn React Native? How about Elm? Maybe you want to brush up on your CSS and HTML. Every weekday, you'll get a short video or reading delivered to you via email. The best part is it only takes 5 minutes a day. We have a special coupon code just for React Native Radio listeners. If you sign up using the coupon code RNRADIO, all one word, you'll save $9 on your first month, which means you can try out the React Native topic for free. Don't forget to use the coupon code RNRADIO to show support for our podcast. Make learning part of your daily routine with DailyDrip.com. Hello and welcome to episode 55 of React Native Radio. Today on our panel, we have Kevin Old.
Hello.
I'm Nader Davit. And our special guests today are Gabe Greenberg and Brandon Conkle from G2I. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So basically, we're going to be kind of doing a show on the idea of freelancing slash consulting slash maybe even running or thinking about running your own company that does React or React Native development. And we're going to go over a few different models, and we're going to in particular talk about the model that G2I is running because it's kind of interesting. But I guess before we get into that, can we kind of get a quick overview of how you two got into programming? Gabe, if you want to go first.
Sure. My background started, you know, as a kid, you know, just with computers and tech in general, you know, playing video games, Action Quake 2, Counter-Strike, all that stuff. And I really got into the web development world through some missionary work. I didn't grow up religious in any way, shape, or form. I found Christ maybe 10 years ago, and I just felt like an urge to go overseas. So I was in the middle of Africa, in Nairobi, in Kenya specifically, and I absolutely fell in love with these street kids. Chakora is what they're called in Swahili, and it means to eat from the trash. These kids are, you know, homeless and sniffing glue, and it's unbelievable what the police do to them and et cetera, et cetera. But we were there helping them and loving on them and teaching them, and we have a place for them to live. We have about 35 kids off the streets now, protected from the police and protected from, you know, living by themselves. And at, you know, 10 years old, I'm talking about. And so I came back from that experience not wanting to be one of those people that just sees something and fell in love with those kids, but sees them and not wanting to do anything about it. So I asked the charity that I was over there with what I could do to assist. And they said, well, we need a new website. So I called up a buddy of mine who knew web development, and called him for a couple months and he never returned my call. So I said, I guess I'll figure it out myself. And that's how I kind of got into this field, this industry as a whole.
Oh, wow. That's so interesting. What were you doing before this?
Before, I was going to college for psychology and then got a bachelor's in social work. So I ended up working at a mental hospital. I wanted to be like a counselor. That was the route that I was going.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about how it progressed from there. So you developed the website and then what were your next, did you get a job with the company or did you continue to do work for that specific company? Talk about what was your trail from there?
Sure. So from that point, I was just messing around with, you know, WordPress and getting something up for this charity and, you know, learning here little bits and of what you need to know. And in 2011 or 2010, I had my first hip surgery. I tore my labrum and I was waiting tables, honestly, to get through college. So I needed kind of a new profession, career. And then it happened again. I had another hip surgery. And every time I'd be out of work, I put a little bit more work into this company, G2I. And it just happened to someone referred some work to me. And it never stopped. And that's how G2I started. It was just trying to earn a living through some physical difficulties.
That's awesome.
So Brandon, how did you get into programming?
Yeah, well, similarly to Gabe, I was interested in programming. And from my childhood, I can remember being 12 and 13 and jumping into QBasic and creating text adventure games with arrays for the room maps and things like that. And I've just always been fascinated by putting together pieces like that. But I didn't head that way earlier on. I started actually going into finance. I was working with Fidelity Investments for a while, doing operations and processing transactions. But I had always been doing programming on the side ever since childhood. And started, as I stepped into more of a leadership role there, I started introducing little tools that I would develop with Python and Django on the side. So I started to kind of build up my skills there, started to do freelance work, and then joined up eventually with a consultancy that focused on Python in the back end. And loved that. I really enjoyed back end work, but I started to see how the front end was changing, how MVC frameworks like Backbone at the time was really big, were really starting to change what you could do on the front end. And that really captured my fascination. And from that point on, I've really been focusing on the front end exclusively. Jumped into React probably about 3 months after it was open sourced. Hated JSX at first, like a lot of people, but I was won over pretty quickly after I saw the benefits. And really just loved digging in and watching this React ecosystem grow, and loved the way that it spread out to other platforms like iOS and Android with React Native has just been incredible. So I'm glad to be a part of that. And ran into Gabe last year through the ReactiveFlex chat platform, and really found a lot of in common, found a lot of same things we were excited about in development. And I've been partnering with them ever since, loving it.
So you started on the back end and kind of moved towards the front end.
Yeah, I sure did. I at first, like a lot of people, was a little skeptical about the front end because it was a less disciplined environment, I guess, than what I was used to, especially in the Python world, which is more of a conservative programming community, I think. But once I got used to a little bit of that fly by the seat of your pants kind of cowboy mentality in the Node world, I really started to enjoy the performance and the kind of features with multi-threading and callbacks and stuff that it opened up. And that got me more excited about the front end and tying the two together. And it just sort of evolved from there.
And what's your role? Do you work with G2I? Is that kind of what you're doing right now? Or do you have other things that you're doing?
Yeah, I'm actually pursuing multiple things right now. So I'm partnering with G2I on development projects and helping them out with hiring and evaluating candidates and connecting people with different roles, like we'll talk about in the business model later. And then on the side, I'm also starting my own consultancy, basically building out a small core team of people that I want to work with frequently and start to rely on. And so that's going to be a long-term goal. But yeah, focusing right now on back and front end development with Node and React.
Very cool. Very cool. I love all the hustle going on here.
Absolutely.
So Gabe, can you kind of talk about G2I and kind of how the company is structured and if you've tried out any other, you know, business models before you came to this particular like way of doing business?
Sure. Absolutely. It really started off, you know, picking back up in the story with, you know, me getting a couple contracts. So, you know, you're your own, you're doing all the work yourself. Or it was at the time, it was me and my brother. He taught himself to code and we were a team. And, you know, so you're wearing one hat, you know, trying to get projects, close them, write contracts, bill people. And at the same time, you're executing on the work. And then there's the gaps in between. So, you know, but it grew over time and we'd always have one company or one person that would feed us a lot of work, you know? And so we'd get, you know, overwhelmed with work. And then we would have, you know, times where they would start to hire in-house. And so then we didn't have so much work. And eventually we connected with a large organization down here in Florida, a big IT company. And we started doing larger projects and were asked for more full stack development. And we partnered with a firm over in Ukraine, managed their developers. And that's around the time we got introduced to React. And so it was a little bit of an outsourcing operation for a while. But all our eggs were in one basket. So we were taking on, you know, the project that we ended on had 8 developers, four people here in West Palm, and then 2 designers in California. And it ended overnight. It was an EMR project, fascinating space, but there were some issues with the client and they ended the project abruptly. And so I was kind of left with, well, how do we keep these people employed? So I started reaching out to more individual or small team type developer ads, responding to them. And they were mostly, you know, Y Combinator oriented companies. And you know, we had an overseas team that could do it very inexpensively with React experience. And there was this fit. So we transitioned to more of an outsourcing only model. And after about 6 months of doing that, I realized that was part of what I wanted to offer, some overseas development. But I also wanted to bring in more people like Brandon in the States. So we started shifting to more of a contract developer collective, where we're working with more individuals or small teams of usually 1 to 4 instead of, you know, large teams of 30. And that's what we're doing today.
Hey, so I actually want to hang on something you were talking about a minute ago that caused you to shift into your own, you know, stateside consulting. And I think it's been a barrier for me in being like a full-time contractor. And I think others have that same fear, is that what happens when the client, you know, that you've got 80% of your eggs in this basket, what happens when they cancel that contract? What did you learn through that, either from the interactions with that client or the lack of interactions with that client? Were there telltale signs that when you took the client on that it could end up like that with them dropping it? Or were there signs throughout? Anything you could speak to related to that?
There were definitely signs throughout. I think part of it, you know, in my learning experience and growing experience is my own denial of the situation and also like greed, you know. So I saw this big shiny project, you know, with lots of interesting work, you know, and needing it very, you know, quickly. And to me, it was like, oh, I'll do anything to keep them happy, you know. But when people are stopping paying on time, and there was a personal relationship there as well. So, you know, I let some of that influence my decision making, and I've learned that it's often the smaller, the medium sized company, putting our eggs in more than one basket, that makes a lot of sense. And really doing my best to continue looking into the future for the what ifs.
So how has it progressed from there? So after that one client, you said it seems like you've diversified into smaller or medium-sized projects that you take on. Can you talk a little bit about what the sizes of those projects are and maybe even timelines that you found work? So is it 3 months? Is it 2 months? 6 months?
Sure. The average size, our wheelhouse is like a 3 to 6 month contract. We find that most clients don't really want to jump into more than a 3 month contract with the ability to renew. So our wheelhouse is between 1 and 4 developers for 3 months with the expectation that they might renew and renew again. Our longest running project is just over 12 months with this new model. And, you know, we have a couple that just keep renewing and renewing as well. And for some reason, we've kind of gravitated towards React Native projects. We've met clients that are early adopters, especially a year ago. And React Native has sort of been an area which we've gained traction on both the client side and the contractor side, because let's face it, you know, it's difficult sometimes finding React Native specific work as a contractor that's reoccurring.
And what types of industries do you work with? Are there any specific industries you work more with?
There's really not. It's not so much industry based. I mean, video conferencing platform, dating platforms, social networking app, a couple other, you know, SaaS apps of different varieties. So it's more that we're looking for the technical client. We're looking for like a CTO, and because we're offering more of a in one sense staff augmentation rather than we're going to manage everything on our side and just give you deliverables and talk to you once a week. We're trying to connect with whether it's one person on their end or a couple collaboratively via Slack and Hangouts. So it's on a daily basis, you know, working together with the clients.
And you said something about React Native specific work. Does the client usually dictate the tech stack, or is that something that you do? And also, do you do back-end work as well, or is it only front-end?
We definitely do back-end work. Some of the guys in our collective are very skilled with GraphQL, among other setups, which are generally speaking set by the client, unless they're coming to us, you know, with a fresh, you know, greenfield project. And with React Native, generally speaking, they're coming to us with something started. And we've had one instance recently where they're coming and saying, we don't know what we want, tell us. And so we'll talk to them about React Native and some of the strengths and weaknesses, but it's not always an easy sell.
So what are some of the other options that you can offer? Do you also do any native development, or would that be something you would kind of refer away? And then also, what about like hybrid stuff, Ionic or Cordova?
We tend to lean into React Native rather than Ionic or Cordova. And recently, we've gotten enough requests for native development that we've started to offer it, but we're kind of branching out slowly instead of trying to force it. So yes, we offer native development, but not really Ionic or Cordova.
So do you find that you're building React Native apps that integrate with an existing backend primarily, or do the clients also want you to you know, bring the new stack? You've mentioned GraphQL, and that, as we know, it's got a lot of attention with React front ends these days. Do you find that when left up to choosing the architecture or even allowing you guys to suggest, that they want you to do the newest thing that makes the best sense these days? So React Native with GraphQL?
Ideally, yes. They, you know, we have some traction in terms of, you know, a discussion about it. But maybe Brandon can talk about this a little bit as well. But then there's, you know, there's really good options like Firebase, you know, which is going to shave off some of the development time. So I think some of them are, especially because we deal with so many, you know, startups, they're really looking for an MVP, and they don't necessarily want anything purely from scratch if they don't have to. So we'll offer it, we'll talk to them about it, especially if we're building the back end from scratch, then we'll push towards GraphQL. Brandon, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it really does depend on the project and depend on the client. And there are some clients that want to work really closely and really collaboratively with us and help make every decision. And I love those relationships. I love working really closely. So there have been times where We've approached it. We've talked about GraphQL and the benefits and the challenges, and ended up going with something else. Particularly, I'm thinking of Firebase for this example, but we've gone with plain Postgres with SQLize and things like that as well. It depends on what the client is going to be using it for, who's going to be maintaining it after we're gone. There's really a lot of factors that'll go into it. And so it's more of something where we'll collaborate with them and see what fits their situation best and make some recommendations. I think GraphQL has fit in a lot of cases, though. We've been able to successfully sell it, even with clients that have had existing just REST-based APIs. I know there's one case where we went in and we helped them start to convert some of their endpoints or offer GraphQL versions of some of those endpoints to help feed the Android app and the iOS app that we were building out, because it was so advantageous over just the standard REST way. We were using a relay, and it just it makes things really nice.
That's awesome. So what percentage of your apps are pure React Native JavaScript code versus needing a plugin written in Objective-C or Java?
So far, none of the React Native projects I've worked on have been purely JS. There have been always little things that we've needed to pull in. For example, the Google Sign-In API or something for integrating with Hockey App or things like that. There's always been modules that we'll need to bring in. But there have been several projects that we haven't had to do any heavy lifting with Objective-C or Java, where we were able to just pull in modules and link them in the development environment and just let it go.
That's awesome. Can you speak a little bit to your development cycle? So when you're interacting with a client and you want to demo, are you guys shipping, the code base and you have them pull it down and run, React Native, run iOS? Or run Android on their machines, or do you use a service that helps you ship the builds to them? Can you speak a little bit about your development process that way?
Yeah, that's something where it's really dependent on how the client is set up. Again, it's something that's going to be something that we like to collaborate with them on and figure out what level of involvement is best for their team. There have been teams where we will just ship the code to their build setup, and then their build setup will go ahead and crank out the APK images or what have you. And then we've had clients that are a little bit further back and will just deploy a Hockey App or Test Flight beta versions for them to test out. So it really depends on what they want. I think the ones where we've done Test Flight demos and everything and have been kind of arm's length like that have still been really successful too. It hasn't been really much of a problem that we've seen.
Awesome. Have you had a chance on any of those apps that do not require any custom native components to use something like Exponent.js to go back and forth with a client as you produce their prototype?
We've definitely been very interested in Exponent. I personally haven't had the chance to use it in production yet, but I've picked it up and experimented with it a little bit, and it's definitely intriguing. Gabe, I think, did we already have some other projects that I wasn't involved in that have used Exponent so far?
Not Exponent, but CodePush. That's in most of our projects. So we use CodePush regularly.
So yeah, that was going to be my next question was about CodePush. Could either of you talk to roughly how many deployments of CodePush you've had, and if you've run, and also how many apps have pushed live updates, and could you report if they've run into any issues with that?
So I believe we have 4 apps using CodePush. The implementation itself wasn't an issue. There have been some issues, of course, with users not getting the updates from time to time. I don't know if they're just not opening the app or it's not actually pulling the code or what the issues have been, but they haven't been users will report something too early, and we will, the client will send out, ping them saying, it will be, I don't know where I'm going with this.
That's okay.
I'm getting confused as the process. But the gist of it is that, yes, we've had a few issues, but I can't think of the specific detail of what the issue was. But for the most part, the clients have loved the process. And that's part of one of the biggest selling points of using React Native, of course. Brennan, any other thoughts on that one?
No, because I haven't had the chance to use CodePush yet. I've been eagerly awaiting the project that I'm in right now to progress to the point where we can set that up. But I haven't had the chance to jump into it yet. Definitely excited about it, though. The live updates with React Native, and then Electron supports live updates on the desktop now. It's really the native development world is becoming more and more like the web every day, and I love that.
I guess I have a question about CodePush. When you release a new update, do you use the staging and then production bundles, or do you kind of just test it locally and then push it up to production right away?
I don't think we use the staging. I think our process is locally and then push it to production.
Okay, because I've yet to find an efficient way to kind of do that, and I was just kind of curious. I'm going to reach out to a few people and see what the best way to do that is, but the way we're doing it, it's pretty clunky. We basically have to, I mean, this might be crazy, but we basically make another copy of the entire application and then push it up to TestFlight or wherever with the staging bundle. That way, you know, some of our QA people can test it, and then we promote the bundle to production. But I'm wondering if there is an easier way. I'm sure there is.
There usually is. You just have to find it.
So I'm also kind of curious, this is more on the business side or the company side. So what is your process right now for working with and hiring developers, and how do you vet your developers and stuff like that?
That's a great question. So again, I still feel like we're, as a company, somewhere between the alpha and beta stage. You know, we're figuring it out. We're testing things all the time, new processes. But as it stands now, you know, either Brandon or I will see somebody that we kind of have our eye on, or plenty of people are starting to put in applications. We just received like 4 applications from Argentina from React Native developers just Friday. So the next step is to, you know, assess, do we want to have a first conversation with them? So Brandon will do some initial code reviews of what they have at open source. So I'll take the first, you know, chat with them, and I try to make it really relaxed and just kind of not only figure out who they are as a person and kind of, but also what they want as a developer. And I'm very specific to ask what their goals are. And because we want them to flourish. That's a big piece to what we do. The next step is we do have React specific and React Native specific code challenges that Brandon developed. And one client was actually kind enough to help us allow us to adopt a React Native project we were working on in production to our code challenge. So it's a repo with real issues from that project that we have as a React Native specific code challenge. We found it to be more real world than just saying build something from scratch or a to-do list. Then Brandon has a technical interview with the developer. And if they seem like they're a good fit, not only for us, but we're a good fit for them, then we invite them in. They sign a basic independent contractor's agreement. After that, they would be in our on our roster. And so sometimes we have some work, you know, that's like a week or two away. And sometimes it's a couple months. So they're waiting. They're on our Slack channel. We're going back and forth asking them about their availability because it changes all the time. And if we find a good fit, then we'd introduce them to the client. They would, you know, talk with the client, see if they're a good fit both ways, and the client likes them. And then we jump into a statement of work followed by a first week trial, usually, where if the client's not happy with the first week of development, we cut the bill in half and we go our own ways.
So do you normally work with the developers on like an hourly rate basis, or how does that all work? I guess I know you said you have like a contract that they have to sign, but is there a commitment on either end, or is it more of a, you know, as long as we have this work, then you're employed. And once this expires, if you're good, then we will give you some more work when something else comes up. Is that kind of how that all works?
Yeah. So we expect them to be getting work through other sources. You know, we're not the only game in town here. So when a contract comes in, if we've worked with them for 3 or 6 months and they've done an excellent job and they want to continue, we're of course looking for work for them that's, you know, in their wheelhouse and based on their strengths. So but sometimes there's not, and they know that. So sometimes there could be a break in the work and they might pick up another project, and then, you know, a month later we have some more work for them. Everything's hourly though. We don't really believe in fixed bids. I kind of get that from, you know, we've built houses for a lot longer than we've built, you know, websites and apps. But I have a friend that's an electrician, and he said the electrical outlet, the breaker box, they have to be labeled because of code. But the reason that nobody labels them correctly is because they just have to be labeled, and everything's done on a fixed price bid when you're building a house. So they're cutting corners, and we never want to be in a place where we're cutting corners because we work collaboratively. So we view the hours that are being billed as, you know, it's up to us and the developer on the project to steward them and to talk about, you know, things that are coming up, and to, you know, give some estimates, but, you know, we don't want to be in that, you know, creating technical debt.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. I've always struggled with the idea of, you know, should I bill hourly or should I bill or give an estimate based on the fixed bid? And, you know, depending on who I'm working with, as far as the client, they're, can or cannot be a good understanding and everything at the end of the day, because, you know, a lot of, I guess it just really depends on who you're dealing with, but a lot of times people, especially if they're not technical, or they, this may be, you know, a new type of thing for them to be doing this type of project, they may want a fixed bid and not, they may not understand how, you know, basically difficult that is for someone to give them a true fixed bid. So you're basically saying that you deal with hourly, not only with your developers, but also with your clients.
Yeah, absolutely. And we say that, you know, from the get-go, you know, we're more leaning towards the staff augmentation model to be part of your team, big or small, rather than, you know, we're going away, building something and giving you updates once or twice a week. So yeah, everything's done hourly, definitely, on both sides.
Hey, so I don't want to lose sight of this. I know the answer, but if you have developers all over the world, they all can't be in the same building. So it seems like you may have a remote style of a setup for your company. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, Brandon, you've been working for a long time remotely, always in kind of remote first company. So I'll let you speak to that first, and then I'll go.
Sure. Yeah, I have had a lot of experience working remotely. The Python consultancy that I started out with quite a while ago, they were all distributed across not just the U.S. but across the world, and so I've gotten used to kind of navigating time zones and trying to make sure that there's overlapping time frames for teams. And I think the way that Gabe is doing it with G2I has been really effective. We've sought out from the beginning clients that want to be collaborative, clients that want to have a day-to-day interaction with us. And we've invited them to our Slack, or we've joined their Slack and stayed really active in chat and used video conferencing tools, not just Hangouts, but there's a really nice one that I'm sure Gabe will talk a little bit about called Pluot that's been really great for connecting people and getting us all on the same page easily. It's been really effective so far. It's been definitely one of the better remote experiences that I've had.
So how many hours does the typical G2I developer work on a project per month?
Generally it's full time, you know, 40 hours a week, but some, you know, clients, you know, they want 20 or 32, and then it's up to the developers if they want to take on that project, knowing that's what they're getting into. And often they're the developers that want to spend a lot of time in open source. So it works for them. So, but generally 32 to 40 is per week is where they're at.
You know, I really like this idea of kind of how this company is arranged. And it feels like it's kind of, it goes along with the way that the economy is moving towards. There's a lot of, there's more and more freelancers. There's more and more consultants. It's harder and harder to build a true consultancy as far as a web consultancy or traditional agency is concerned, because there's just so much more specialization going on. And it just seems like it would be harder and harder to keep a team of, like, say, 20 developers that do enough things under, you know, under one roof and keep them employed full time and still be able to deliver, you know, efficiently to the client all of these specialized things going on because, you know, just like I said, there just seems to be more and more specialization. And more specialization that goes on, the more and more fractured the community, you know, of people that are available for hire are going to be. Does that, do you kind of agree with that?
Yeah, 1,000%. It just becomes a machine at some point, you know, and it's not like it works for a lot of people and they're really good at it. It's just for us, we fell into this kind of model and we were already working remotely. And so, you know, a 30-person consultancy, you know, at a certain hourly rate, you know, with a nice office and all the trappings that you need to hire employees. I mean, you might have to do $500,000 per month just to keep the lights on and the employees paid. And so we are looking for mutual fits and it allows us to kind of turn down some work because we don't have to take on this work. Instead, we can make sure that it's a right fit for the developer and for the client. And also we can be transparent with our billable rates to the developers working with us. In addition, I see a model and this is something that we're like talking about, but what if somebody comes to me in the collective and they're saying, hey, I really want to start, you know, my own shop, you know, my own consultancy, but be part of your network. And I'm like, great, let me help you. We want to mentor you. We want you to grow on the business side and the technical side, but also on the communication side. So here's some pitfalls. Here's some contracts, or this is what you might have in your contracts. This is what to watch out for. Can we connect you with a client, you know, and or a one or two person shop? They need another developer or two. Well, you can grab them from the collective at a discounted rate. So something that's a little bit more open in terms of the model and less kind of one way, we're telling you what to do, or something that is massive like an Upwork.com and lacks specialization.
Yeah, and also the fact that you're saving all of those, you know, unneeded costs like a big building and all the overhead that goes along with running a company like that. Yeah, it definitely seems like you know this type of organization would probably be able to deliver similar or better results, you know, for cheaper prices.
Yeah, I like the hybrid team approach. You know, for some clients having a developer that's fluent and a good communicator, because they can be two different things. You know, someone that's a good communicator and wants to go after the client and understand what's being built and speaks English natively, you know, here in the US, but then having somebody on the team as well that's in, you know, in Peru or Brazil, or, you know, Bratislava. So it does, we're able to cut the costs, but still provide development that's healthy.
Yeah, hey, so I want to talk about clients. I mean, how you go about getting client work, either, you know, outright cold calling, or do you find it through other connections or other outlets online? Can you speak to how you're able to get clients and client work? And do you have repeat?
So yes, that's one thing that I'm really happy about. We do have repeat clients. Some of our clients have told us, you know, because they're a startup and they aren't ready to hire, you know, but they're in that in-between, you know, phase. And so we've helped them during that phase and then they go hire and it's like, great. And then they have another startup and they come back to us, you know, and it's been amazing. We absolutely love our clients and we're thankful that they've come back to us. And we, G2I still has its first client back, you know, in 2012 when we started. And when it comes to finding work, I've never been a cold call type person. I don't know why. It's just I get emails that you know from outsourcing companies, and it usually isn't a fit. But if there was a true, you know, fit, if someone would reach out to me and say, "Hey, you know, we do React Native, and we have a small team, and we really, you know, like what you're doing," I'd be more apt to, you know, listen and respond to them. So I try to do the same thing if I don't know the company and you know, read what they have on their website, et cetera. But the main way we do, you know, bring in sales is some traditional advertising we're starting to dabble in, but through responding to developer ads, you know, whether they need a developer or they need a project done. So things that are already out there, either in communities or job boards and the like. And then the probably the number one way that we're getting consistent work beyond that is just people referring us, whether they're in our collective already or they've just heard about what we're doing. Because ultimately, you know, we're developers for developers. That's the mindset that we have. So that's a big lead source.
That's awesome. And another question on just the overall project perspective. So do you do projects that you disconnect from at the end of the contract, or do you have the concept of maintaining infrastructure for your existing clients on like an ongoing basis, if that makes sense?
Totally does. Most of the time we're building something out, and then we're also in charge with maintaining it. There's once in a while we'll build a project, like a web app out. It'll kind of, they'll do what they need to in terms of getting it monetized or whatever their goals were. And then they'll be reaching out to us like 9 months later for like another phase. But I'd say majority is, as long as we're involved in you know, they hire us, and there's also going to be some aspect of maintenance involved. And then the rest of the work is just, there's already a product being built and they need to hit a timeline, and they're getting one of our developers for 3 months. And after the timeline's finished, they're, you know, thank you so much, this is perfect, and we'll reach out to you if we need, you know, help in the future. And then it could be smaller items. You know, we've been helping recently some of our clients with React Native performance. So that's been very, very new, but very specialized consulting in that regard.
So you've done React and React Native. I know that you mentioned that you may have done some Electron work or something like that. Can you kind of go into any desktop application development or anything other than just straight up web and mobile?
Yeah, this is actually one of the things that I'm most excited about React Native for, is this idea of interoperability or universal applications across multiple platforms. The project that I'm working on right now is a collaboration app, and I've been able to build it out in React Native for iOS and in Electron for the desktop and on the web with React and Webpack. And I've been able to share a core code base that contains all of the Redux state, all of the API integrations, some shared components that are used on multiple platforms and that aren't specific to the presentation. And being able to reuse those everywhere has been extremely useful. We actually had a designer come in just recently to start doing some work on the UI and making things really striking there. And he was able to come in with no really mobile or desktop native experience at all and just touch our React components, just touch the web style code, and end up making some great interface changes with almost no help from me or the other developer on the project. He was able to just intuitively get up to speed with it. So that kind of experience is just amazing.
So I guess that is super interesting. I guess I would like to know how you kind of came about the idea to put someone like that on that project, but also how much code is being reused there, and I guess what else is being used in that project as far as like any NPM modules and that type of stuff for anyone else interested in implementing something similar.
Yeah, we really approached it this way from the beginning because we knew how quickly iterative web development can be versus native development or native mobile development. I'd had experience before. I'd worked with a startup called Craftsy out of Denver before I started going back to consulting. And they had dedicated Android and dedicated iOS teams along with a dedicated web team. And during my time there, I helped them start to reuse some of the core logic through Redux without actually doing any of the views yet. And that's what gave me the idea. We had an event emitter set up that would emit events to the React Native side so that they could take advantage of all of our business logic that we had in our Redux and our non-presentational components around Redux. We could reuse all of that across both platforms, and we could reuse all of our REST API integration, all of our API calls using Axios. We were able to bring those over to React Native also. So even without using any of the views in that project, we were able to still reuse a ton of really intensive code, the code that's really hard to write and the code that you have to write a lot of tests for to make sure it's correct. So I had that experience. And then heading into this collaboration project, this remote project that I'm working on, basically, I wanted to take that even a step further and be able to share the large parts of the code base. So with this project, I pulled it in and I'm using the React Native views. React Native owns the views, whereas with the Craftsy project, the native code owned the views. And then I'm able to pull in Redux and I'm able to pull in all of my modules, all of my reducers and all of my actions and everything from my core module using Lerna. I use a mono repo structure and I use this library called Lerna to organize everything. So I've got a core module and I've got a mobile module and a desktop module, and they all share the core and pull that stuff in.
That is awesome to hear. I literally just learned about Lerna over the weekend. I had, or actually what it is, and it's going to help me quite a bit with the projects that I have that we're maintaining the modules independently and not underneath a certain structure. I knew that Babel had shifted to that, but I really didn't, I don't know, I don't think I really cared about what they did between Babel 5 and Babel 6. I just noticed that all the packages lived underneath that mono repo structure. But once I started digging into it this weekend, it seems like it solves like all the problems I've had over the past few months had I known about it. I say that I saw the name Lerna fly by on Twitter, but I didn't really give it a thought. I didn't grasp what it was until I saw a link to a GitHub issue that someone had enabled a bit of new functionality over the weekend. And then it really started sinking in like, wow, I wish I had this 6 months ago. So what is your experience been like with Lerna and specifically with the modules that you're producing for React Native?
Well, there are three specific things I can think of that have been kind of noteworthy in this setup. First of all, the React Native packager doesn't like it. And it does not like symlinks in your node modules directory. So to work around that, I'm using a library from Formidable Labs. They shared a kind of a high-level wrapper around the React Native packager called Whackage, Whackage. And that's helped me pull my core module in basically by rsyncing it into the node modules directory behind the scenes. And so that's worked around that problem. Next, some of my issues were I'm doing some WebRTC peer-to-peer stuff, and so I'm using a library called SimplePeer from NPM, and that relies on some node-specific platform libraries that React Native doesn't provide. And there's a library called RNNodify, N-O-D-E-I-F-Y, that I use to polyfill. Basically, it pulls in some of the polyfills from Browserify to make these node modules usable in a React Native environment. And then I think the last challenge that I had with it was that Lerna doesn't support Yarn yet, and I'm a habitual early adopter, and so I'm kind of itching to use Yarn. But it doesn't really need it. They just added in a recent beta version of Lerna, they added hoisting where they're actually deduplicating requirements just like Yarn does. So it's not necessary, but there's still part of me that's sad that I can't use Yarn with it.
Yeah, that's great to hear. Thanks for those pointers. And completely agree. I'm 100% sold on Yarn. And actually today on the Twitters, there was a tweet that showed upgrading to the 0.23 of Yarn, and it saved something. It took a node module directory that was weighing in at about 500 megs down to about 150. And so that was just because they were linking and reusing what was already downloaded.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic. That actually sounds really similar to the hoisting feature I was talking about in Lerna. From what I understand, the roadmap is for Yarn to start adding Lerna-like functionality later on. So basically, they're going to build something like Lerna into the Yarn tool itself. So eagerly looking forward to that. But In the meantime, learn is great.
All right. Well, I think it might be time to go ahead and start wrapping things up. So we'll go ahead and jump to the picks. Kevin, do you have any picks?
I do. I have a few picks. I have really been digging React Navigation that came out with the 1.0, I believe. The beta. But it feels like 1.0 to me. I just love that it takes all the ideas that we've had and that have actually been worked on throughout the years with React Native and put them into like the best way to navigate inside of your React Native application. And it gives you the ability to have a stack navigator and a tab navigator on different screens and not feel weird about how you're handling the navigation. And I really love how it built off of all the different navigators. So Navigation iOS, Navigation Experimental, and then the stuff that the Exponent guys were doing with X Navigation. So main pick is that one. I also want to highlight, there's a package called React Native Parallax Scroll View, which it's absolutely awesome from a just wrapping around like an infinite scroll view kind of thing. It has the optional sticky header, which is really popular, and it you can nest it in other views. So it's pretty cool. Last pick is one called React Native Lightbox, which if you're familiar with Lightbox from like the web developer days, this one hit a core with me. And that you want to, you know, highlight some photo and be able to move it around. This actually fits that. And I don't know, I haven't really used it anything, but I see a couple of places where I want to, and it feels like it'll perform really well. So those are my picks.
Great. Brandon, do you have any picks?
Yeah, I'll shout out React Native WebRTC. Like I was saying, I've been working with WebRTC lately, and I've started using this library for polyfilling some of the web, some of the DOM API for WebRTC, so I can reuse my web and my Electron code for video and conferencing in React Native using the same API. So that's one way I can add that WebRTC code to core and share it across platforms. And this React Native WebRTC module provides that API, and it's been relatively, you know, minimally painful. It's always a little bit painful to incorporate something like this, but for the most part, it's been really smooth and worked really well. So great job on Oni from GitHub for sharing that.
Awesome. Gabe, do you have any picks?
My pick would be Pluot, which Brendan mentioned earlier. If you need to do stand-ups or interviews, you know, on a daily basis, I love having my computer separate for taking notes or, you know, whatever I need to look up. And Pluot allows me to have hardware like a Logitech camera, a Jabra speakerphone, so I could send it anywhere in the room and you know, put it into my TV, which I have mounted. And you know, it's fantastic as a, you know, Skype or a Hangouts replacement, especially for stand-ups, you know, daily stand-ups. Fantastic. I love it. Pluot.co.
All right. Well, that wraps up episode 55 of React Native Radio. Brandon and Gabe, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
And we'll see everyone next week. We'll be right back.